Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we visit with Sharon Morrissey. She is the UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County, and she has some tips for you for extending your growing season. We'll also talk about planting garlic and spring bulbs, and maybe talk about your favorite bulbs. Do you have some favorites? I hope you'll join in with those suggestions, and also, of course, your questions. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. And Sharon Morrissey, welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
I'll tell you what, it's great to have you with us again. I've looked at my tomato plants this morning. I probably have 20 bright red tomatoes sitting on those plants.
Oh, how wonderful.
And they look just wonderful, and I have a whole bunch of green ones, too.
Well, we'll hope that we get a little bit of heat and we don't get too much cold so that those can turn red on the vine, because they're much better that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What are some ways we can extend, though, our growing season this fall?
Well, talking about tomatoes, you know, people worry about protecting their tomatoes when there's an early frost warning. And you can do that, and it's worth it if you're not going to have frost warnings every night. You know, then it's kind of time to just give up and harvest the green ones and get done. So putting a cloth or something over an old bed sheet or something over the tomato plants at night, before the sun sets preferably, is a good way to protect it, because that ends up holding in that radiating heat that's coming from the soil, and it keeps them just warm enough that they don't freeze. But other ways to do it, sometimes it's as simple as just putting out a thick layer of straw over vegetables in the vegetable garden, or over some of your new perennials. Put some wood chips over those to protect them and extend the season. You can also make low tunnels, as they're called, little mini greenhouses over crops that are still maturing, so it keeps them a little warmer for a little longer. That's not going to work with something like the warm season loving crops like peppers and tomatoes and things, but it will work with the cool season vegetables, which you don't need to do it until the first frost, probably. Spinach, lettuce, any of the cool crops, radishes, Chinese cabbage, those kinds of things. You can really extend that by, you know, once it starts getting quite cold, then put these little tunnels over them. And it doesn't have to be elaborate, so it's pretty easy to do.
We had someone ask me about potatoes. Their potato plants, the plants are all down and flat, and is it okay to dig the potatoes up?
Well, yeah, it is. It depends on how many they have and how long they plan to store them. Once those vines have died back, then that's all the growth that those potatoes are going to have. So they're as big as they're going to get, and you've got as many as you're going to get, so you can go ahead and harvest. But if you're going to store them, it does seem to help thicken the skin on the outside to make them last longer in storage, to let them stay in the ground for another couple weeks, and then dig them. And then be sure to leave them in a warm spot for a while, maybe a week or two, to again let that skin kind of harden off, and that too extends that storage life.
Good suggestions. Kate in Menasha has something relating to bulbs, I believe, so let's go to her. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a first-time dahlia grower, and I really love them. They're still blooming. It's just wonderful. But I have to store them this winter, and I wondered if I have to be concerned about preventing mice from getting to them in my basement. Will mice eat winter bulbs?
I wouldn't put just about anything past mice. You know, they got to make a living. They're hungry. So they will eat just about anything. And if you do have mice that get in occasionally and you know that that's a threat, I don't know of a lot of ways to prevent them that are not toxic. You know, mouse traps work real well. Mouse poison works real well. Covering them and making sure that they're sealed up well enough is a way to do it without using poisons. But, yeah, if you get mice in your basement, I would try and protect those dahlias down there.
A little hardware cloth wrapped around the box?
Yeah, that might do it too, right. Any way to exclude them from it.
So, I was wondering, I probably shouldn't close, I shouldn't put those bulbs in a box that's closed up, is that correct? So that they might get, not moldy, but...
Yeah, they can get moldy, and it's kind of a fine line. They do need to either be sealed. They used to seal them in wax, dip them into paraffin, the tubers that are formed. You could also put them in peat moss or a little peat mixed with soil, slightly damp, and in a plastic bag that has holes in it, or a box that has some breathing room, you know, has some air circulation. But sealing them in completely, and especially in a moist environment where there's some moist soil or something, will cause them to rot. So you're right about that.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Good luck.
Along the bulb issue here, Linda on Facebook wonders if it's possible to plant spring bulbs in containers now and then set them out in the spring.
Yeah, it definitely is. Planting them outdoors into a ground bed in the spring may be difficult because you probably will do some damage to those roots, and you never know what the soil is going to be like in the spring, how long it's going to take for it to warm up, how wet it's going to be depending on how much snow cover we had and how much rain we get in the spring. But if you were to plant them in containers now and hold them over the winter, then you could pull those containers out in early spring and just enjoy them as forest bulbs. You'd have to keep them at cooler temperatures because bulbs do need the cool temperatures and certain periods of cool temperature in order to stimulate the flowering once they warm up. So you can't just put them in your basement and let them sit. You would need to put them in a cooler area. A refrigerator is a great place to put them if you have a spare refrigerator in your basement or something. A window well is a good place to put them, too. Or a cold frame. All of those, the two outdoors, you would have to make sure that you provide some protection for them from mice and voles. They definitely will get into them if you're not careful.
So can you plant your spring flowering bulbs right now?
Oh, yeah, you can definitely just plant them now if you're ready to do that. I guess I was assuming that there was a reason why you couldn't plant them right now. But if you can, that's the ideal.
Yeah, get them in the ground, and they will bloom then next spring, I see.
Right. That's how fall spring flowering fall planted bulbs work. They have to have the warm soil temperatures in the fall to get the roots to form, but not the shoots to form. And then in the spring, once they've had enough time for cooling and it gets to the right temperature for them to start growing, they'll start growing and flowering.
And which bulbs would be best planting at this time?
Well, any of the ones that we think of as traditional spring flowering bulbs, tulips, daffodils, hyacinth, crocus, those are kind of the most common ones, but you also have all the what they call minor bulbs, like scilla and the kind of like Attendodoxa is glory of the snow, and snowdrops is another great one, or Grecian windflower. Those are all very small bulbs you put in. They multiply real well, and they really give a great show after a year or two in the ground.
Yeah. And Jenny wonders on Facebook if they have to be dug up after they bloom.
Not at all. You actually should not, because they do need to ripen, as it's called. The leaves that remain after the flower has faded do have to grow, and grow pretty vigorously. So that's the time when you apply some fertilizer to the bulbs after they're done flowering, so that foliage can nourish that bulb as much as possible, because that's when the flower for next spring is going to form. It's kind of formed late in the spring after it flowers, and then it stays kind of dormant until the following spring when that flower comes up.
Yeah, excellent. Frank and Toma has a question for you on a different topic. Hi, Frank.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Geez, it's great to get in touch with you. Your show does a great service, and so does the UW. It's amazing what you guys do. But
thank you.
I don't want to get off topic, but I wanted to ask you, would I be violating some law of nature by pruning or thinning my lilac bush right now?
I love that, violating the law of nature. No, but would I recommend it? Probably not. For a couple of reasons. You know, we don't know how much longer it's going to stay warm. It could stay warm for a while. And whenever you prune, it does stimulate new growth. Now, if we have a warm spell now that lasts through November, you could easily stimulate some of this new growth, and then the new growth doesn't have time to get ready for that hard freeze that's inevitable. Into December, it could get very cold. So it's not really the right time to prune at all for that reason. But with spring flowering shrubs, they produce their flower buds in the summer of this year, and then in the spring those flower buds open, and that's what we enjoy as our lilac flowers. If you cut off branches now, you're cutting off the flower buds that you would otherwise enjoy in the spring. So sometimes it's a trade-off. It's not that it's going to hurt the plant to do the pruning before the flowers have come out. It's just that you don't get to enjoy them. And sometimes that's okay if there's some major pruning you need to do, shaping the plant, and especially if you're trying to rejuvenate it. It's an old, kind of ratty-looking one, lots of stems, and you want to cut that back severely. That does have to be done before flowering. If you did a little bit of light pruning now, it probably wouldn't hurt, but be aware that, you know, if we do get this warm season, you're kind of taking a risk by doing it now. You could do it at the same time you would do other shrubs, end of the dormant season, next spring.
And you would do the third kind of approach, Sharon?
Yes, it depends on how vigorous your lilac bush is. If you have a lot of stems arising from the ground, those get very thick. Some of them get very old, so the first ones that were produced get very thick and old. And by removing those oldest ones, you kind of stimulate some newer ones to grow. And, yeah, you do kind of prune a third of the total plant out any one year. And if you do that every year, then you're kind of constantly keeping it fresh and renewed with new stems coming up all the time.
Yeah.
That's great. I just want to know, are they get insect infestations from anything like that? I mean, are they subject to that?
If you prune them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, if you prune them, pruning doesn't really affect it one way or the other. Pruning doesn't attract any insects to it, as is the case with some other plants. But there are a couple of insect problems that lilacs can have. Scale is one of them. Those are little insects that kind of attach themselves to the branches and then suck juices out of the plant. And there is also a lilac borer. That can happen. Distressed lilacs, and in certain parts of the state, you might have more trouble with it than others. But generally, they're relatively insect-free. It's more the diseases like powdery mildew, and there's a bacterial blight that affects lilac, and those are kind of the ones that are difficult to work with or to, you know, control, but they also are pretty ubiquitous. It's pretty common to have those problems.
Wow. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Appreciate the call. Visiting today was Sharon Morrissey, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest Sharon Morrissey, and great to have you listening in. We have an open line or two. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. You can post your questions or even your garden photos on our Facebook page, and you can email us a question at ideas@wpr.org. You know, we were talking about extending the season, and Chris on Facebook says old down comforters have a purpose after your dog has torn them up. Lay them down on your veggies at night and take them off on the sunny days, and until the ground freezes hard, even a delicate lettuce patch can be taken into December.
A great reuse of something. I love it. Gardeners seem to be really adept at that, you know. You just find
it.
Every way to use something to its fullest.
I love it. Don in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I'm almost 95 years old. I've been growing tomatoes in Wisconsin here for the last 55 years. I've tried just about everything. Method that I have settled on over the years, which works best for me, and that is, and I seldom have heard about it, and that is that before the plant is touched by frost, it has to be before it's touched by frost, you carefully dig up the whole plant from the ground, shake the excess dirt off of the plant, and then hang the whole plant upside down in a cool storage room on a nail or a hook or whatever you have, and leave it there to dry. It doesn't have to be a lighted room. We've had them in a dark room. And anyway, the plant will gradually dry up, as will the stem holding the tomatoes. And we have harvested red tomatoes as late as Thanksgiving time, and they taste just like a vine-ripened tomato, and they stay stuck to the vine because the stem hardens as the plant dries up.
Yeah.
That is a spectacular idea, and I can see where it could work. I'm not questioning that at all. I'm just trying to think where in my house I could hang up my tomato plants. You know, even if you only do one of them that way, find a spot in your basement where you can kind of just hang it upside down, you'd have those tomatoes late into the season. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you, Don.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that call. And let's see, Tom in Sun Prairie up next. Tom, hello. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a age-old question that I know you guys have addressed, but I can't remember the solution. Raised flower beds and how you keep critters from eating everything in there.
Oh, these critters, I tell you. Every time you find a way to control them, they find a way around it, it seems. But there are some recommendations for those sorts of things. So you're talking about during the summer you have problems with them, or is it more in the winter and they get into the roots?
It's more of the summer. They're mm-hmm. annuals. And we tried marigolds and some of the so-called critter-resistant plants, but
yeah.
Boy, they go after them all.
And what kind of plants, what kind of critters are you talking about, first of all?
I think they're rabbits.
Okay. Yeah, I think with rabbits, the best way to handle those is to exclude them from the crops, so some way to keep them from getting at it. And fortunately, rabbits don't climb a lot, so you can use just low fencing to put around the bed, and then you can still probably work over it, but the rabbits won't get in. But that exclusion is probably the best. There are also repellents that you can use. Some of them are area repellents, they call them, and they have a smell that keeps the rabbits away. But that smell gradually dissipates, and so you have to reapply whatever you've got out there, and you've got to be kind of diligent about that. And the other type is a taste repellent, where they have to come up to it, take a bite, and then go, ew, I'm not doing this, and hop away. So either way, though, you do have to be diligent about replacing it when it rains or after a period of time. So those are kind of the two best ways to keep rabbits away.
They really want in.
They're
probably going to get in.
And they eat so much. You know, we have some geese outside of our building, and every time I see them, they're constantly chewing. Their jaws must be built for constant motion, you know. They got to eat all day to get enough food to survive.
Thanks, Tom. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Oh, let's see. We had Karen on Facebook says she buys a mum every fall. It usually has lots of bulbs, or buds, I should say, but very few of them open. Why is that?
That is surprising. Buying them before the buds open is always a good idea, and yet so often you see these beautiful mum plants with the flowers completely open. You buy it, you take it home, and within a few days they start turning brown and they're done. So buying them with the buds closed is a good idea. I would have to say it has to do with watering more than anything else. It wouldn't be light necessarily unless you're getting them very early, and then, you know, the plant needs to have some light, but it shouldn't affect the buds too much. And then moisture is all I can think that would keep them from opening up.
The lack of moisture.
Right, the lack of, I'm sorry, you're right.
That's about the only thing I can think of. I bought a very large mum planting for a housewarming present for a friend a few weeks back, and I was over to visit, and when I buy them, I usually buy with the buds at least half of them unopened. So it looks nice when you present it, but there's still plenty to go.
Absolutely. That's a perfect timing, and people don't often think of that. So, and then they do open.
Yeah.
Once they've formed, and especially if you see the bud and you can see color in there, there shouldn't be too much that's going to prevent that from happening unless they dry out.
Yeah.
So
let's go to
buy
David.
Them someplace else. I guess.
that's another trick.
Place, I don't know.
Dave in North Freedom, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I've got a long windbreak hedgerow. I planted it for wildlife enhancement. It's a mixture of High Bush by Burnham, I think Silky Dogwood, and Nine Bark. Mm-hmm. And it's probably, I don't know, 8 feet tall.
Okay.
The Silky Dogwood's getting kind of leggy, and it's kind of going over into the fields on the side. I planted it for wildlife. You know, I want birds to nest in there, and the Nine Bark puts out an awful lot of flowers with an awful lot of bees. When do I prune it, and what's the best thing? Do I just whack it back to the ground and watch it come up in the spring, and when do I do it?
Oh, that's an option. Whacking it all the way back to the ground is an option. Those shrubs that you've mentioned are multi-stem shrubs that send up new stems from the base when they're pruned, and they can be pruned all the way down, and then new stems will come up. You will be without much of a windbreak for a while, but within a season, you'll probably get a couple feet of growth out of these new stems. You would do it at the end of the dormant season. That's kind of the rule of thumb for pruning. If in doubt, prune at that time, you know. And like I said, with the flowering things, the spring flowering things, you might lose some flower buds, but the plant itself, especially if you're going to cut it all the way to the ground, it has to have the whole season and all of its energy to send up those new sprouts.
So we're talking spring.
Yeah. So at the end of the dormant season. So it can be, you know, in February or March, you know, sometimes in February we'll get a nice warm sunny day and you get out there and prune then. That's fine. March, try and get it done before the buds are starting to open on those shrubs. The other way to do it is just to try and selectively cut out some of the oldest, thickest stems, and that, too, will stimulate some new growth. So you'll always have the height you need, but you're renewing the plant every year.
Is it going to be a problem? It's a crop field next to it, and it's kind of encroaching now. It's like 4 foot on either side. If I just lop the tops off on those, or am I better off to take it all the way down?
Well, the part that's kind of going outside of the the band that you're trying to produce the windbreak in, those are going to just keep growing. If you whack them back, they're just going to keep growing up. If you diligently over and over cut them back, you may be able to keep them from causing too much damage. But really cutting them out, if they're encroaching on the ag fields beyond your property, you may need to cut out that suckering that goes beyond the main crown. And these shrubs are kind of designed to do that. That is what they do, is the silky dogwood and the ninebark particularly. They kind of form colonies. You know, they tend to make suckering growth so that the clump gets larger and larger.
Okay. All right. Yep, that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tammy in Rice Lake, your turn. Hi, Tammy.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I bought a couple hydrangeas, and I did not get them in the ground. Wondering, I live in northern Wisconsin, Rice Lake area. Is it too late to put them in, or how can I overwinter them? Do I prune them down, or I don't know.
When do you expect your first hard frost, or have you already had it?
I think we've had it.
Oh, boy, okay. You know, the soil stays warm a lot longer than the air does. So, and that's the important part, is that that root system has a little bit of time to get itself established. And so I think I would recommend going ahead and planting it now. As far as protecting it, again, you're trying to protect the root system. The stems should be hardy, but you could pile some like straw or organic matter or even evergreen boughs or something around the base and the lower parts of the stem to help them, to protect them through the winter. And I think most hydrangeas probably would be hardy that far north even once they get established. So this year would be the only year that you'd probably need to provide the protection over the soil where you've just planted to protect the root system, and then a little bit higher up so you're protecting the first few inches or foot of the
stem. Do I want to water them real good?
Yes, definitely water them really good when you put them in. And it probably wouldn't hurt to do a fertilizer application when you plant them too. When you transplant things, fertilizer can help to establish their root system. You'd want to use something that has a higher middle number on the fertilizer product, and there are a lot of those available out there on the market. Sometimes they're called bloom boosters or something like that, because it does also help with flowering during the growing season, but it's because of that phosphorus, that middle number.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Karen in Eau Claire. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have a question about rose bushes. So years ago, I planted rose bushes, and they're regular large roses, and I did the rule where you dig the hole so deep and you let it drain for X number of hours, and then you have to have, like, 6 hours of sunlight, you know, and I did all that. And I don't ever get any, I don't ever get blooms.
Do you get growth? Do you get a lot of growth?
I get growth, yep. And actually, the other day, I decided to go ahead and just trim off. It's probably 2 weeks ago. I trimmed off just a kind of a long, lanky piece. And on one of the bushes that I did that with, this shoot came up, and the thing must have been 5 feet tall. It was just crazy. It was like, well, you really are impressive.
Yeah,
with nothing on it.
What have you been waiting for? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I'm just wondering, is there something I should do this fall to encourage some blooms next summer? And the other thing I should note is that I also have one of those little bushes that make the little tea roses.
Yeah.
Little pink tea roses. Mm-hmm. That thing just goes crazy in the same spot.
Yeah, interesting, because then it probably isn't sunlight so much. Which kind of surprises me, because roses do require a lot of sun. 6 hours is absolutely a minimum, and it depends on what time of day it is. And it could be that the larger size roses need more sunlight than the smaller tea roses do. And the shrub roses, they can tolerate some shade. But the larger, the grandifloras hybrid teas, those definitely require a lot of sun. I think that has more to do with the you're not flowering problem than anything else. But with the stem that shot up 5 feet tall, if they are hybrid teas or grandifloras or even floribundas, those they're grafted. And so if you have a long stem coming up from underground, it's probably coming from the rootstock, because the rootstock will be more vigorous than what they grafted onto it, you know, the rose you bought it for. And that would not then have the characteristics of the rose you bought it for either, because it's from the rootstock, not from the scion, the top part. So, you know, you can leave that. It may produce flowers for you. They may not be anything like what you planted it for. Or, you know, if you really are trying to grow just that grandiflora you planted or whatever, you'd need to cut that all the way back down. But I have a feeling that that site is not sunny enough for those roses. Now, the other thing you can try is this fall is a good time to fertilize woody plants. Late in the fall, though, when all the fall color is all over all the other trees, it's time to go ahead, you know, whether yours is actually colored up or not. But, you know, when things have gone dormant, that's the time to fertilize woody plants. So you might want to do that with the rose now. It won't stimulate new growth this season. It's there. It'll nourish the roots. And then next spring, some will still be there to, you know, make it emerge and grow as, you know, as well as possible in the spring. Then if you still don't get flowers next year, I'd say you need a new location.
Yeah. Is there any chance that there's too much nitrogen in the soil?
Well, not necessarily in the soil, but if you've been fertilizing it with a lot of nitrogen, yeah, that sometimes will produce more leafy growth than flowers. Yeah, that's a good point. Do you think that might be the case? Do you fertilize it a lot?
Well, I don't necessarily fertilize a lot or on a schedule.
That sounds familiar.
I'm like, well, what is wrong with you? Here, have some food.
I think the recommendation.
And the one thing about the light is interesting, because I actually have, like, they have all morning light and they have afternoon light till probably 4 o'clock. And I actually have lilies behind them. And the lilies, of course, have green like crazy until they bloom. And I'm kind of wondering, now that you're talking, if those lilies aren't shading them.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And maybe I just need to get those lilies out of there and just let the roses have the whole area.
Yeah, and roses don't share well. They like to have beds of their own and space of their own and not have to compete with a lot of other things, especially those grandifloras, hybrid teas, those things. The shrub roses can live with other plants around them. But, yeah, that may be it.
Mm-hmm. That may be it, yeah. Okay.
And then with the fertilizer, the recommendation is usually to do it once a month in May, June, July, and then stop.
They're not getting fertilized that much for sure.
Okay, well, no way. Then we know that it's stopping them from flowering, and that's the one thing I'd be worried about with not flowering. If you give them too much nitrogen, if you fertilize too much, it'll stop them from flowering.
Is there a particular fertilizer that you would recommend this fall?
No, I'm sure they have some things for roses. You just don't want it to have really high nitrogen content. You know, as balanced as possible is best, but it's hard to find a really balanced fertilizer, meaning that all three numbers are close to being the same. A lot of the fertilizers these days seems to have a 20, 54, 15. You know, it's really different numbers. And that 54 does stimulate some blooming and some rooting. So those bloom buster type fertilizers might be a good suggestion.
Yeah, good luck, Karen. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yep, appreciate your call. And Jan and Viroqua up next. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I had permission from a friend to dig some echinacea and a few other perennials and a very small stunted aronia bush. And I'm wondering whether I should dig them now or in the spring.
With both of those, I would say now.
Good.
you know, the only thing to do that you probably should avoid digging now, as far as perennials or woody plants, the things that flower in the spring, if you were to dig and divide them now, if they flower in the spring, then digging and dividing now is a good idea. If they flower in the fall, then you probably would want to wait until next spring. So most of our perennials really do prefer being dug and divided and moved in the fall.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Tom in Menominee Falls, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I got a question. I heard the lady talking about roses, and I saw a really beautiful rose bush, and I was just wondering, can you cut off stems and start those, root them?
It depends. Everything depends. But, yeah, a lot of times you can be successful with that. There's a certain time of year to do it. The stem has to be a certain stage of maturity. Sometimes with some plants you do it when the stem is very young and supple, and other times you wait until it started to form some bark or some, you know, get thickened and hardened off. Other times you would do it in the winter, and then you'd root them over the winter. And with roses, I've known people to just cut off a stem and put it in some, you know, rooting medium, some soil that is well-drained but still has moisture and air, and they root just fine. I've known people to just dig them, cut them off, dig a hole, plop them in, and they grow. And it really does depend on the rose and how it's going to react.
Now, some of that would be, or sometimes that could be an issue, I would think, I mean, a lot of roses are grafted onto a hardy rootstock.
Right.
And so you wouldn't have that hardy rootstock.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Right, right. I guess I was thinking about more of the shrub roses that aren't necessarily grafted. But, yeah, if it's grafted, then it won't necessarily be as hardy or maybe as vigorous if you just root and grow the stem. On the shrub roses, however, that's not as much of a problem. But then you also have to be aware of patent laws, and if it is a patented rose, you cannot just propagate it yourself. Fair home use, a couple here and there, I think is understood to be okay, but you certainly can't produce a lot of them and sell them.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have more callers. Let's go to Bill in Presque Isle next. Hi, Bill.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. Well, I'm involved in the industry, so you learn a few tricks over the years. And I live way up north near the UP. And in my raised beds, I basically start a crop of spinach and lettuce quite late in summer, and then keep a frost cloth handy. And with our changes of climate, we're eating the most delicious succulent greens well into late November.
Oh my. And what is the cloth that you put over it?
Well, it's something I'm sure you could look on a garden shop. I mean, I get it from our business, but it's a frost cloth. It's a white maybe quarter-inch foam product, and that stuff will survive even in the upper teens being covered at night.
Wow.
Oh, and does any light come through that, or do you need to take that off then during the day?
Oh, yes, we take it off. It's
okay.
It only goes on in a severe night.
Okay. Yeah.
And then one other comment about the hardy mum with the buds that I guess I thought of, kind of important, is where they came from. Because when they come from a grower and you know where they came from, you generally have better luck. But sometimes I see mums that are, you know, at box stores and they're under shelters and they're not getting light, sometimes even in the store, and those buds can abort in a matter of days when they're not in good condition.
That's a good point. And I wonder, too, about them being held in cool conditions with humidity control so that they can ship them more or ship them earlier or whatever, that might sometimes also affect the buds and keep them from flowering.
Yeah, I mean, those buds can abort so easy, even if they spend a couple of days on a shipping truck.
Yeah.
So,
well, very good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
All righty.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Sharon Morrissey, our guest today, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Sharon Morrissey, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. Always great to have her along, and thank you for listening in. Now, lines are full, but the number is 800-642-1234. You can also send us a message at ideas@wpr.org or post a garden photo or question on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. Edna in Wazika, our guest up next. Hi, Edna.
Hi. I was wondering if you could please tell me when's the best time to prune weed gillas and how close to the ground should I cut them.
And what is it you're at? What plant are you talking
weed
about?
Weigillas?
Weigilla.
Okay.
W-E-I-G-E-L-A.
Right. Okay. There's several ways to say that. So
it's
kind of an old-fashioned shrub that flowers late spring, early summer, right? And really, they, too, are best to prune in at the end of the dormant season. I believe they produce their flowers on new wood, but I'm not positive about that. I would need to look that up. Because if they form their flowers on new wood, then you can prune them early in the season. They'll produce new stems, and those stems then will flower. If they produce their flower buds on old stems, then they've produced them the year before, and then you're pruning off those stems. So I need to look that up.
we'll try and look that up and get back to you, Edna.
Alrighty, thank you.
Yeah, just stay listening. Maybe we can do that over the news break or something. Whatever. Let's go to Lee in Green Bay. Hi, Lee. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. The lady that had called before, and you mentioned a well-balanced fertilizer. I believe it was for roses.
Yeah.
Jack Peters, and they call it Jack's Classic.
Uh-huh.
It's in a powder form. He's got a lot of different specialty foods, such as, like, all-purpose 20-20-20. He's got some for petunias. He has some for, I think he's got one now for the hydrangeas to blue them up more, to make them more blue, you know, like the endless summer. But Jack's Classic is a real good one.
Very good. You know, I just bought some Jack's fertilizer, which we always knew as Peters fertilizer, and then I realized that it's Jack Peters. So it's just another branding thing. But, yeah, they've got quite a range of products. I did have to look for it online, so that's what we recommend people do. But thank you. That's very true.
Yeah, thanks, Lee. Mm-hmm. Yeah, appreciate it. Ernest in Vernon County, your turn. Hi, Ernest.
Hello. Say, I'm sorry, Larry, I missed the buckthorn show.
Ah.
I had a family commitment, but I've had great success with a weed burner, a propane tank, much like you would use for a barbecue grill.
Yeah.
And they sell a wand that goes to that. It's got a nozzle on it. And this is the perfect time to do it. It has to be quite wet because you can set the woods on fire, of course. But if you blister that tree all the way around so it's charred, it cannot suck in its nutrients, and they can't push them up. And I've had everything I've tried it on, it's killed it dead.
So you go around the
The base of the tree.
Around the base.
I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a large tree or if it's the size of your thumb. But once you cut off its supply, how it works going up or down, whether it's a fall or spring, it kills them.
Yeah.
And
so you've had really good results.
Yes, because I'm by myself, and you can't cut a tree and then move it out of the way and then get on your hands and knees and brush on a herbicide and make any kind of progress at all. But with this system, you can just walk right around each tree as you go, and I put that out for others to try it. Last spring was my first try at it, and those are still dead. And I think it would even work better now that because they're the last tree to drop their leaves and take in the sap would go into the ground. I think it's probably the best time to try something like that.
Hmm. Ernest, thanks for calling. Sharon, a comment.
Oh, yeah, I think that probably sounds like a good approach. I know they do use burners on weeds and woody plants possibly as well. I'm not sure what the best time to do it is. I think about the fact that it is quite green. If you're, you know, to try and burn it when it's green, it keeps
harder.
It from catching fire, but I don't know that it's going to be as effective. But in the fall, it is a good time because, as our caller said, all of its nutrients and things are going down into the root system rather than coming up and pushing up, so and forcing new growth like it would be in the spring.
All right. Ernest, thank you again. Thanks. Yeah, appreciate the comments. Marie in Brookfield, your turn. Hi, Marie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I have a question about what I think is probably deer damage to maybe a 3-inch diameter Japanese tulip tree. The bark is really thin on the tree, and I think it's a deer. Somebody said it was a deer, and about half of the trunk for about a 3-foot, maybe 3 feet, half the trunk is like rubbed bare. And I don't know what to do about it. I don't know whether the tree will recover. Do I wrap it? When do I wrap it?
Yeah.
This is my first experience with deer.
Yeah, and that probably is buck rub, where the bucks rub their antlers, and they do it on the trunks of trees a lot of times, and it rubs the bark off. And I don't think that there's anything that you can or need to do about it. To prevent it, however, or to prevent it from happening again next year, would be to put some hardware cloth or something on the trunk itself. And as you see, you have to put it up kind of high so that because that's where they do the buck rubbing, or the rubbing, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so kind of it's...
Wouldn't do anything now, though.
But I don't think you need to do anything now. You don't need to clean up that shredded bark that got pushed up or clean out the wound or do anything like that. The tree will heal itself to the extent that it can and will. So it depends on how bad it is, too, if it can survive that or not.
No.
So I don't need to put cloth on now, or I do?
No, you do not. Nope. Because the problem with putting any kind of anything over the wound is that it's going to hold moisture against the trunk. You know, dew will get in there, condensation is in there, and it will stay very moist, and that can make it, it can damage the new healing tissue that's trying to form. So you want to just leave it. Trees can heal themselves when they've been damaged like that, and our intervention is usually more harmful than not. It's trying to prevent it that's the important part, and prevent any more of it at this point.
So if we have other trees, would I put preventive stuff on those now?
I don't think that the I'm not sure what the season is for buck rubbing. I would think
it's usually
spring.
Yeah, it usually
fall?
Yeah. You're I wouldn't do it. No.
Okay.
Somebody may call in and say, what are you talking about, Mueller? But I'd leave it go. If you had one rub there, it's not likely you're going to get another one right there. Not as likely, anyway. That's my word on it, and I hope I'm right.
I can't say anything more about it because I don't know either.
Jim in West,
I don't know when that happens.
Jim in West Allis, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And what I'm calling about is I've got a hardy hibiscus plant that I'd like to split and plant other plantings from, and I'm wondering when's the best time for that. They come up so late that it's hard to see where they're at. Now they're so thick and almost woody that I'm not sure when the best time to do it is.
Yeah, I think letting it die back down to the ground, which they do over the winter, you know, letting all the leaves fall off and everything, once it's gone dormant, it may be the best time to do it. I just recently moved one of mine because I had to, and that root system down there is a huge, thick, it's not tuberous, it's just these really thick roots. I think you can do it as long as the plant is going dormant or in the fall is the best time to do it. And it may look like you're damaging it a lot, but I think that it will tolerate it and it would be best in the fall. So you may need to cut down those stems once it's done flowering. You can wait till the leaves fall off and then dig and divide. The earlier you do it, the better, because you have some warm soil that gets the roots growing and settled in a little better. But if you have to do it later, you can just provide some mulch over the top to protect it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did it. I did try one digging a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago at the most, and everything above the ground kind of wilted back.
Yeah.
Do you think the roots are still viable?
Yep, I think they're fine.
Yeah.
Because that's about what mine were like, too. And I had one stem. This thing was in too much shade. And when I dug that root, I only got a portion of it, but it had a bud on the root. And so I'm not concerned about the branch that died, that wilted back. That bud is what's going to make the plant grow next year. So I think you'll be fine.
What about growing them from seeds? You know, the seed pods are, have...
I don't know what the dormancy requirements and the cold treatment requirements are for hardy hibiscus. I would think with its life cycle being that it dies back to the ground every year, it grows in cold temperatures, seed maybe needs a cool, moist stratification before it's planted, and you can try that by just mixing some seed in with some slightly damp peat moss and a little bit of soil mix, putting it into a plastic bag that has holes in it, and put it into a cold setting. Those spare refrigerators in the basement, if you can take the beer out and put the plants in, they're great for doing things with plants.
and that'll work. That will definitely work. Sharon Morrissey, our guest today. She is the UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. Our guest on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Sharon Morrissey, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. Great to have her along, and thank you for listening in today. If you have some gardening questions for her, I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. Again, we would love to hear from you. And Sharon, we have Jordan in Grafton with a question for you, so let's go there.
All right.
Hi, Jordan.
Hi. Great show, by the way, you guys.
Thank you.
So I grow the super hot variety of chilies, your Carolina Reaper, Ghost Chili, and Scotch Bonnet, Scorpions, and all that. And what I'm wondering is how I can bring them into their dormancy state this winter without killing them.
They don't really have a dormancy state. They do need to be kept growing during the winter. And so they need to be kept in a very sunny location indoors or with artificial lights. I have a neighbor who had a back room that faced south with big windows, and they would put their pepper plants on it, dig them from the garden, put their pepper plants on it all winter long. They would stay growing. She would occasionally be able to harvest a couple of peppers, the small ones. They grew habaneros. And then they'd put them back out in the spring. But they do have to be kept growing. They really don't go dormant, and I don't think that you could force them to kind of be in stasis for a while, just kind of suspension.
Yep. So there you go.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck, Jordan. Thanks for calling. Rosemary and Hayward, your turn. Hi, Rosemary.
Hello. I would like to know, when and how do I get rid of pampas grass?
Oh, boy. All the time and no, you can't. When and how? And no, you can't. Well, it depends on what the pampas grass is. There are several different genuses, and up here it's not really a pampas grass, but it is a very, very vigorously growing grass that has rhizomes that spread. And, you know, the main thing is that you have to... You have to avoid trying to cut up those rhizomes into smaller pieces, because each of those will then produce a whole new plant, and you're just aggravating the situation. And so physically trying to remove it doesn't really, it may make it worse. And so herbicides are probably the next thing that you have to resort to. I guess another approach might be starving it out, and that method is to cut down everything that grows as soon as it grows. You know, never let it have very much green growth on it, and then that way there'll be nothing photosynthesizing and producing new food for the roots, and the roots will be starved out eventually. But this is something that can take a long time. So that's another reason why a lot of people choose the herbicide route for damaging plants or killing plants, killing weedy plants. And I think you would have to use glyphosate, something with glyphosate in it. Because it's a grass, the broadleaf weed killers won't work. So you'd need to use something like Roundup. And you can do that in the fall. And you can do it as sort of a cut stump treatment, I would imagine. I mean, I've never controlled it, but I know, you know, the procedure and the concept of how this works. So if you were to cut it down this fall, those stems will still have some green functioning tissue in them, and it'll be moving carbohydrates down into its root system. Spray it with Roundup, and it'll take the Roundup into the root system. And you probably will need to do that multiple times and then manage the suckers as they keep coming up. Because, as you know, it's a very, very vigorous plant.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Good luck, Rosemary. Appreciate your call. You know, we had some questions a week or so ago about how do you get the husks off of the walnuts, black walnuts. And Ralph Olson sent me a letter, and he said, here's what he does, and this is based on a tip he got from Bud Ponack from Madison. He takes a 2x4, about a 4-footer, and using a hole saw, he cuts two holes, one 1¼ inches, the other 1½ inches. So he's got two holes. Then he takes the 2x4, you put it across a couple of sawhorses or a couple of chairs or whatever, and then you pound the husked walnuts through the holes with a hammer to remove the husks.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard that one before.
I haven't either. And well, the beauty of that one is you're not getting your hands all, you know.
Wow.
So I like that. I like that approach. It's a 2x4 with a couple of holes, round holes with 1¼ inches and 1½ inches. That's great. And then he says to crack the black walnuts, he likes the Duke lever action walnut cracking machine. made by the Duke Company. So there you have it.
Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Probably a lot better than driving over them in your driveway until they crack open, huh?
Yeah. I kind of like that approach.
It
work out a little aggression issues that you might have. If you have questions, by the way, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Cliff on Facebook asks, how much stem should he leave above the ground when cutting asparagus that has ferned out? Also, he lives in northern Wisconsin. Do you recommend covering with mulch to overwinter asparagus?
Well, I don't think asparagus is tender. I think it is hardy enough to grow in northern Wisconsin without covering it, so I don't think you need to do that. And as far as how far down to cut the ferns after they've grown out over the summer, and usually we say wait until they get their fall color, they turn yellow, and then cut them down. You can cut them all the way to the ground, because those stems are, they won't do anything more ever, and they're just kind of hollow, woody stems that you'll end up breaking off eventually. And then the new shoots come up around them, so there's this crown that you're trying to nourish. So you can cut them back as far as you want to.
Nancy from Oconomowoc emailed to say that she has a six-year-old peony shrub that blooms beautifully every season, but the blooms have no scent. What's causing that?
It's the variety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them do. You know, some are better than others. Some of them have better breeding than others. And some of them are bred and selected for fragrance, and some aren't. I have some beautiful lilies, and they don't have any fragrance whatsoever, ever. Yeah. So, yeah, it just depends on the variety.
And the one caller earlier who had the, was it Wyzilla she pronounced?
Yeah.
It?
Yeah.
Wrote in to say that they should have light pruning for shape following the spring bloom.
Yes, I looked it up myself, and that is pretty much what it is. They do form their flowers on old wood. And so if you prune off the branches before they flower, you don't get to enjoy the flowers. And then, you know, you need to kind of shape them as the season goes along. And so you may need to cut out a branch here and there to shape them. But it does flower on old wood.
And Mark on Facebook wonders why his two maple trees planted on the same day, side by side, turn color at different times.
Breeding. Once again, you know, they're not identical, but they're not the identical genes, and so one of them is slightly different.
I have a couple of the neighbors on either side of my lot have a couple of enormous trees. One sheds its leaves, and then the other one waits for that one to finish, and then it starts.
Because it wants to make you work. You have to keep raking and raking and raking.
Oh, I look at those trees every year, and I wonder. Oh, man. Kate asks if she can cover garlic planting, including when to put straw mulch on.
I would wait until the soil gets pretty cold. You know, I'd probably wait until it freezes. The problem with you put any winter protection down while the soil is still warm, it could keep the soil warm longer than it normally would, and then that can stimulate some of the growth, and you really don't want the garlic stems to come above ground. If they do, it's okay, but you'd rather not. So let it get pretty cold. It's not going to hurt them.
David on Facebook says you do need to do something about
the buck rub,
depending on the deer activity in your area. They will be back and hit the same trees year after year. Also, if there's a path they travel, you will notice it as they will hit key trees on the path. Black deer fencing is what he's found to be the best. You need to put it out late September through early December or through winter, depending on how much of the Cambrian layer that has been affected. Your tree may feel just fine or not.
Yeah, it depends on how much of it has been taken off. I tried looking it up during the break, and there's a lot of publications about deer, but they have various approaches. Some are just about harvesting deer, you know, deer hunting, and others are about controlling it in rural areas. But the urban areas didn't have as much address, so it would take me a little while to see. But I think that that approach sounds very logical, and he's done it, and it works.
Yeah, good for him. Mm-hmm. Rita in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Rita.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I guess. thanks for listening. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
I'm a longtime listener. Here's the deal. I had all my flower beds were replaced by a landscaping company, and they put in all new plants and new mulch and everything. And within a week, I saw something that looked unhealthy. Actually, it looked like somebody threw up. And so I sprayed it with a hose, and coffee-colored dust hit the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that problem all summer. Now, and my plants are not thrived. They are sickly. They're yellow. They have white dusting on them.
Yeah.
So I called the landscaper. He said, yeah, nobody else has got this issue, but we'll come and address it by taking all your plants out, taking all the mulch out, treating the soil, and putting new plants back.
Huh.
Now, my question is,
Do I have to go that dress? Well, what it is what's called slime mold.
Mm-hmm.
And some people call it dog...
It looks...
Yeah.
Some people call it dog vomit slime mold because it does look like somebody threw up. And it's different colors. And it usually is on wood chip mulch, and it's when the wood chip mulch is, you know, pretty new. It's just that area has been exposed to the air when it hasn't been for a while, and it just blooms, and it has this mold that forms. And then once that dries down, it really doesn't spread from place to place to place. Now, that all of those wood chips, and in many areas of those beds, there may be slime molds forming, but it's not because one slime mold formed and it moved over and formed again somewhere else and somewhere else. So it's not spreading. And once it's bloomed, it's done. So right now you might have a lot of powder and stuff on the foliage and on the plants, but I think the bigger problem with the plants is that when you put anything that is high in carbon on the soil surface, it uses up a lot of nitrogen as the microorganisms and stuff start to break the carboniferous stuff down. So the wood chips are breaking down, and they're using up nitrogen. Then there's less nitrogen in the soil for the plants you're growing. So I think a little fertilizer would just take care of that, but not now. It's the end of the season. I don't think you want to get them growing vigorously at this point. Next spring, when they start to emerge, I think that's the time to give them a good shot of fertilizer. And I wouldn't say that you really need to do anything if it really is slime mold. And I think that's what you're describing.
It is. You know, your response, the way you described it as dog vomit, that's exactly what it looks like. Okay, so here's my question. What did you call it again?
Slime mold?
Slime mold.
Slime mold, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Dan in Door County. Dan, hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I was listening for this. People had some problems with deer rubbing their horns on their trees and knocking the bark off.
Yeah.
I have been growing fruit trees up here, and we have lots and lots of deer up here. And the way to keep them away is to hang bars of soap in your trees, the stinkiest stuff you can find. I go to get the generic brand, and it's green, and it says Irish in the brand name. I'm not going to be promoting a certain brand, but they don't like the smell. And what I do is I wrap a little piece of opaque white plastic, the bags that you bring it home in from the store, and paint some eyes on there and make little decorative ghosts and hang them in the fruit trees, and they don't like that smell. About two bars for each tree. And later on in the year, you know, they lose the urge to do this, or they've rubbed all their velvet off their horns, and they won't bother your trees anymore. So you could take your ghosts down after about December or so. And that has worked for me for a long time. Also, if you're going to go with hardware cloth on your to protect the trees, you can take a heavy twine or a hemp rope or something like that and soak it in fuel oil that you use for your furnace. That's really stinky too, and they don't like that. And you can take that rope and drape it around your hardware cloth, and don't get any of that fuel oil on the bark. That's not good.
Right.
But that'll keep them away also.
Yeah.
I also had a question for you. I grow these caladiums. They're a tropical ornamental.
Uh-huh.
And I need some information on storing those roots for winter. What's the procedure?
Because they're tropical, you don't need to store them held in too much moisture. I believe that you put those into slightly moistened moss and also some potting soil in with them, but slightly moist, plastic bags, holes in the bags, so they just stay slightly moist. Now, I know that our Wisconsin Master Gardener website has an article on caladiums and storing caladiums over the winter, and so I could recommend that you go to that. It is wimastergardener.org. And then once there, you go to Learn and then Articles. And then you just search for the article on caladiums.
There you
go. Put a fungicide on them, I'm thinking, eh?
No, I don't think that's necessary.
Uh-huh.
You just have to make sure that they don't stay too wet.
Yeah, okay. I see.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had lots of questions about garlic here when I had Inga Wisher on the program, mm-hmm. who's raising a lot of garlic. Where do you? Where's the best place to get bulbs to plant garlic?
There are a lot of sources, mostly mail order, and so going online and looking for sources, and I would try and find sources that are, in the vicinity, sort of, because then you're getting ones that are going to be hardy here. Our local garden centers that have online ordering often have several for sale, and they offer a nice range of them. And there are so many different kinds of garlic. A lot of people don't realize that. You know, they're used to buying the white cloves in the grocery store, and that's garlic. But there's lots of different flavors and fragrances and uses and sizes of cloves and hard neck and soft neck and, you know, lots of choices that you can make. So it can be kind of fun growing a lot of different garlic.
Yeah, it is. It is. When somebody wondered about when do you know when it's time to harvest
garlic? Yeah, that's an interesting one. They send up their leaves in the spring after you plant them in the fall, and then the leaves grow most of the summer. About mid-July, really be watching for the leaves to start browning and drying down. It'll be the lowest leaves that dry down first, and each of those leaves runs down to a wrapper on a clove. And so you're going to wait until, well, with the hard necks, you wait until about half of the lower leaves have dried down and half are still green. And I believe with certain varieties, you can wait for, you count how many leaves have dried down. So when they're about half dried down and the other half is still green, that's probably a good time to dig. You can dig one, see what condition it's in, and if the cloves are the size that they should be and all that, and see if it's ready. The problem is if you leave them too long, that papery wrapper that goes over the garlic disintegrates, and then you'll have kind of naked cloves, and they won't store very well. They can already be damaged by some mold and mildew kind of organisms, so you don't want to wait too long. Check them as soon as you see about half of the leaves dried down.
Yeah, and storing them?
You need to store them. To begin with, you need to cure them, and that's in warm conditions. And you let them sit for about 2 weeks in warm conditions before you even take the leaves off or the roots. And then once they are dried off and the paper wrappers have dried well, then you can cut the stem down to about an inch long, and then you can cut the roots off almost completely, already flush with the bottom of the clove. And then you would store them in dry conditions with some slight humidity. It's like storing potatoes, sort of.
Yeah.
You want a little bit of humidity, but mostly dry.
Well, Sharon, the music tells us it's time to go. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Look forward to your next visit.
Well, thank you, and it's always a pleasure.
Sharon Morrissey, our guest, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent for Milwaukee County. She'll be back, and we'll do it again next week on Garden Talk. Neil DeBole comes back to talk about prairie gardening. And on Monday, we take a look at physical therapy with Jill Nissenbaum and Lori Brody. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.